Hey, all you cats and kittens, Adam Ray here. Thanks for watching and listening to the About Last Night podcast. Get it on YouTube, subscribe here, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Rate, review the show, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your lovers, your ex-lovers, your dad, your dad's weird friend, Ron, who always tries to give you beer, even though you're like, I'm only six. Today's guest is a banger, one of my favorite comics to watch. I'm sure one of yours, a true staple in the comedy world. He's about to go on tour and do his, I believe, fifth special, maybe sixth. His last one, Thoughts and Prayers, and then Hot in the Maternity? Fuck. It's Anthony Jeselnik. Type in the name, you'll get a bunch of goodies. What a great episode. He and I really hit it off. I've only chatted with him a handful of times on the clubs, and more recently, last week at the Comedy Store. And had enough of a back and forth where I was like, dude, do you want to fucking pot it up? I didn't say it like that. I'm not that cool. But he agreed, and we knocked it out. 90 minutes. It's awesome. Truly one of my favorite eps. Covered a lot of ground. His Tonight Show joke writing days. His early starts in Pennsylvania. College. Coming to L.A. The grind. How he got into stand-up. Flourishing. Finding his style. Getting into the clubs. Knocking out specials. Who he digs, what makes him laugh, and it finishes strong. So enjoy the hell out of this episode. Follow him on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Anthony Jeselnik. Follow me at Adam Ray Comedy. Tour dates, adamraycomedy.com. We got Detroit. Detroit already happened. What do we got coming up? We got Raleigh, North Carolina, and then some dates with Sal Volcano in Alabama, Knoxville, and Atlanta, and then Portland, Seattle, Vegas, adding a few others, all that, adamraycomedy.com, where you can also get your Adam Ray merch, your About Last Night podcast merch. Again, subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, comment below, and let us know your favorite part of the episode. Got a bunch of bangers coming up to close out 2022 strong. So without further ado, please enjoy this episode, one of my new faves, with the man himself, Anthony Jeselnik.
Hey, it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Is the air bothering you? I think it's going to keep things chiller in here.
I'd rather be cool. And
okay, great. Do you run hot?
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm always sweating and shit.
Fuck, me too.
Yeah.
I think my mom passed that down to me. Is that a mom trait that they passed down?
I don't know. I remember someone told me, like, I did my premium blend, and they were like, oh, you're sweating a lot. And I'm like, oh, you're German, so you sweat a lot. And I'm like, what?
Yikes. Who said that?
Some, like, lady backstage. And I was just like, oh, okay. And I started saying that. My mom was like, why do you tell people you sweat because you're German? You're not German. I'm like, what are you?
Oh, you're not even German.
No. I'm like Germanic, but mutt.
What does that mean?
It means I'm from, like, all over. Like, the gotcha. DNA is just, like, it's not just.
Do you enjoy to take an interest in, like, the origin story of Anthony Jeselnik? Like, somebody asked me the other day, like, where's your dad from? And I was like, fuck, I don't know. And that's on him for bouncing when I was nine and not giving me the full scoop.
There was a
we'll edit some laughter. Yeah,
there was a family who, they're like, they're Jeselniks in Florida.
Oh, cool.
And, like, a long time ago on, like, MySpace, this woman got in touch. She's like, I married into the Jeselnik family. I traced back through, like, ancestry.com. Here's what I found.
Yeah.
And there were, like, three brothers who immigrated from Slovenia years ago, and they settled in different parts of the country, and that's, like, what we're from. And I was like, oh, cool. I went and told my family, and they were like, all right, yeah, we're eating. I'm like, oh, you don't care at all where we're from.
Nobody.
It doesn't matter.
Well, I would venture to say more people don't care than do care.
Yeah.
23andMe, I think, like, definitely got people fucking, dude, I'm 2% black, I'm 5% half Jew. And you're like, yeah, but then you find that out, you post about it on something. And then I don't know if you're, like, doing holidays now because of it, or you're maybe for stand-up purposes it's funny because it's something to pull from.
You can make the most hack joke of all time. Yeah.
I don't do any of those jokes, by the way.
Like, I just, like, when I was growing up, I would see, like, Irish people just being like, we're Irish. And I'm like, yeah. All right, like, relax, man. No one gives a shit.
You can tell by the leprechaun that you're holding. Yeah. There is Yeah, I don't know. I've never been, but I'm also not a giant history guy. I don't know if ancestry and history are tied together. I feel like they are. If you care about one, you probably care about the other.
Yeah.
Are you a history guy? What was your favorite subject in school?
English. I was a lit guy.
Yeah.
Still am.
Reading and writing.
Mm-hmm.
One more than the other?
No, but together, you can't really separate them as far as I'm concerned.
Is it weird that I can, or astute that I feel like I can observe that and appreciate and agree with you saying you're a big reader, because the way that you, your cadence on stage, the way that you talk, you always have eye contact when you talk, which I appreciate. You know, it's not it's an acquired skill set, I feel like, especially in our business. A lot of people, I feel like, just are thrushed?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thrushed.
Yeah. Into this. Coming out of COVID, I was like saying words again for the first time to people. And I was like, fuck, gonna need a quick fact check on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Thrushed into settings where you're maybe not a social person. And now you're like at a club and you're almost like expected to be. So I never like judge when I see people that are like, you know, just a little socially inadequate, whatever. Mm-hmm. But I could tell from the way that you talk, your word choices, that you are a big reader. Do you like that?
Do I like reading? Or do I like...
Sorry, it's my first podcast. No. Do you like that I could pick up on that? Like, do you celebrate that, I guess, about yourself? That you come off well-read and well-educated.
I love
that's what I was looking
for. You have the instinct to know that I'm well-read.
Okay, cool.
I love it.
Always been that way?
Yeah, when I was a kid, I went to Montessori school, and I was a holy terror. Holy terror. Like,
it sounds like the rival school of the Montessori.
Mm-hmm.
Holy terror, yeah.
They couldn't get anything done because I was just such a nutcase. And the only thing they could do to settle me down was to read to me. So they had a volunteer who came in, this old man who was like the dad, the dad of the principal of the school, would come in like a couple times a week and just read to me for hours.
By yourself?
Yeah, just the two of us. And that's
how
the only thing
crazy
that
were
me
you? Out. Like throwing shit balls across
the... I was in an empty classroom at like 4 or 5 years old, just like, why? I don't want to do this. Like a day of Montessori school, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm going to learn to tie my shoes and do this. And then all of a sudden you're like, this is boring. Let me do something.
Wait, so there were a few lessons that you were like, this adds up. Tying my shoes feels like something I'm going to need down the line. Mm-hmm. But then when they were like stacking blocks, you're like, fucking fuck that. Why aren't we doing this? Or I just don't want to do it.
I can stack blocks on Monday. But come Wednesday, you better have something new for me.
New activity.
Yeah.
Especially at 5. Wow. And wasn't Montessori school like, it's like private school more or less, no?
Is there a way to turn down my earphones?
Yeah, am I too loud? I'm coming in hot.
So loud.
For a guy who runs cold, I'm coming in real hot.
That's...
Yeah? Talking. How's that? You turn me down. You can turn me back up a little bit. My cans.
It's one all the way.
Okay, great.
But it's the audio's recording.
Perfect. But the audio will stay. Great. Wow. Okay. So what kind of books? Old man's coming in and reading you what?
Like, I mean, I assume they were children's books. I don't remember the books.
Not like the Fisher King or Bernstein Bears Tell the Truth.
It was like... It would be like someone explaining how the Matrix works.
Gotcha.
You know what I mean? To like a kid, I was just like, wow, you just look at this and you can tell me a story. Like I was just locked in.
Awesome.
Never like said boo. It was just like great. And then once I learned to read, that's all I wanted to do.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so was there a fascination with writing that came with that then? Like the more words you learned, the more you wanted to like.
Yeah, it was like, oh, I can do this myself. Like that was cool to me. And I always wanted to be a writer, like a novelist before I became a comedian.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Were you a funny kid? Like with this old man, would you have a back and forth? Like with the teachers, when they were saying shit, would you at least like banter back with your...
I tried. Like I got into it as I like got a little older. I remember like in second grade, like making sarcastic jokes.
Yeah.
And my thing was, if you make a joke in class, you're getting in trouble. But if you make the teacher laugh, you don't get in trouble. So that became my thing.
Whoa. You know,
it was like, let's see if I can like, if I can do like, almost like the ultimate joke of, I'm going to disrupt class and you're all going to love me for it.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it didn't work out that way a lot.
Yeah.
But
when it did,
it was great.
Yeah. The percentages on how much that you got to catch that teacher in the right moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would constantly go. I mean, I went from, you know, one-liners to whoopee cushion on the chair. Like, you know, you just have to read the room, especially as a kid trying to... Were there other class clowns or did you kind of stick out as like the kid?
I was the kid for a while, and then I remember in high school, like I was in honors classes, so there was like the class clown was like was in like the regular classes doing his thing, but I would but I just drove teachers extra crazy because like this is an honors class, you should be taking this seriously, and I couldn't. But I remember I lost class clown my senior year.
There was a competition.
There was like the it was like people wrote in votes. You know what I mean? Class clown, best smile, but most athletic.
Yeah,
and my parents were like, "You better not win class clown." I was like, what? It'd be cool to win something. And they're like, not class clown. Why don't you win most studious? And I'm like, it's senior year. It's a little late. I'm not winning most studious.
Damn.
I have this. Why did my friend Joey won it?
Joey. Joey, do you remember his last name?
Delavecchia. Yeah.
Fuck. Can I be honest? Joey Delavecchia and Anthony Jeselnik. Anthony Jeselnik, as soon as I heard your name, which I can't remember when, I think, I want to say it was pre-last. Were you on TV pre-last comic?
I hosted Last Comic, but that wasn't that long ago.
Okay, no, yeah. Was there a, maybe it was a Premium Blend? Was that the first?
Mm-hmm.
Or a late night spot, maybe?
Premium Blend.
Yeah.
A couple late night spots.
It was the Premium Blend, yeah.
Like the thing that.
The roast that got you some national exposure, right?
I think I did like a half hour before the
yes. roast. Yes. I remember hearing your name and then just seeing it all at the same time and being like, yeah, duh. Is that a, like, I feel like you have a comedian's name. Do you know what I'm saying? And also, Anthony Jeselnik sounds like the kid that was like, if you said Joey Delavecchia?
Delavecchia.
Delavecchia. That kid, like, talking about you, let's say to people that didn't know who you were, I'm sure they're like, oh, yeah, that's a, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it sounds like the guy, Adam Ray doesn't sound like the guy who was trying to fucking make kids laugh and disrupt class. Jeselnik sounds like a fucking, like, you're made for this.
I think I can see seeing that now. At the time, it was wildly divisive. No one could get it right. I thought about changing it for the stage.
You did.
Many times, yeah.
Because people would say what?
Like at an open mic, they're like reading it off a piece of paper that I've written down, so it's even worse, and they never got it right. And then one day, I was like, you know what? I'm going to be Anthony Matthews. Matthews is my middle name.
Cool.
I'll be Anthony Matthews, and I put it on the pad, and the guy's looking at it from like, he's on stage, and he's looking down at the pad, and he goes, Anthony Willis? And I was like, if you're going to fuck up Matthews, I'm just going to stick with Jeselnik. And then I used it as like a litmus test.
Yeah.
You know, if you're like, if someone comes up and like, you're Anthony Jeselnik, I'm like, you don't know who you're talking to. You know what I mean? But if you get my name right, it shows respect. It,
yeah.
Like, it kind of lets me know where I stand with you.
What were some of the alts that really stung? Like, you know, teasing wise, let's take it back. Like maybe fourth, fifth grade.
Oh, Jeseldick.
Yep.
Jessel prick.
Yep. Jizzle something.
Yeah, but they got that out of the way early. You know, and in high school, or like, you know, when I was a kid, everyone just called me Jeselnik. So they didn't really make fun of it. It was like, oh, yeah, Jeselnik. And then cool. You get to college and everyone just knows me as Anthony. No one even knew my last name.
Is there a Tony in there ever?
My dad is Tony.
Yeah.
We had the different middle names, so I'm not a junior, but he was Tony. I was Anthony. And people say, you don't look like a Tony. I'm like, good.
Wait, so both your folks didn't want the class clown award sitting on the mantle. Because why? Not funny themselves? Tried? Didn't want to do it?
Oh, certainly not funny themselves, but just thought school was very serious. Why aren't you taking it seriously?
Because they're what? Teachers?
My dad was an attorney, and yeah. My dad like used school to escape from this like small town in Pennsylvania, like went to Notre Dame on a ROTC scholarship.
Wow.
Went to Georgetown Law on his own dime, hustling, waiting tables to get through it. So he like valued hard work in school, and I was like, it's party time. Let's fuck around.
Yeah.
Like I'm here to hang out with my friends. And truly like, didn't understand what school was supposed to be until maybe a couple years ago. When I look back and I'm like, God, I should, if I had just, you know, yeah, done the reading, I just never did anything.
Really?
And
where'd you go to school?
Tulane.
Nice. That's where my mom went.
Oh, really?
New Orleans. Yeah. She was in Sophie Newcomb. Is that still there?
Mm-hmm.
That's a sorority.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, a sorority or a dorm?
Sorority. Sophie Newcomb. Fuck.
No,
can you believe if I was making this up right now? Sophie Newcomb, I believe, is a sorority because she goes down to do the last 20 years, her and her sorority sisters have gone down. Maybe Sophie Newcomb is a chapter of, somebody hit a pudding. She goes back to do a habitat. They build homes for people that are still really struggling from Katrina the last 20 years. But she loves it down there.
It's the greatest city.
Tried to get us to move down there at one point.
Really?
Yeah.
What stopped you?
She once her and my dad split. It was just my sister and her and I, and we were either going to go there or Oklahoma, where her folks are from. And she just goes, I was, I guess, involved in sports and had a handful of buddies, and she didn't want to pull me from that. Which I'm glad. Seattle over Oklahoma, I think.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Wait, so you grew up where?
Pittsburgh.
Okay. Are you like diehard?
I try to be. Yeah. They make it tough. You know, I love the Penguins. I really like the Pirates and like root for them, but it's kind of a lost cause. And Steelers fan, for sure.
Pennsylvania in general, a real blue collar. Mm-hmm. I mean, just so is that also probably what probably fuels the parents of like, don't be a fucking dickhead. Don't goof off. Like, this is a state where we just buckle down.
Yeah, I had to prove myself a lot. And now everything's cool. Everything's great.
It is.
It took a long time.
Damn, what was that first thing that kind of turned them on to like,
I think
okay.
like album reviews, my first album came out in like, I think 2010. And it was like, okay, like people were like, all right, this is great. It was like, you could look at it and see it. And writing for Jimmy Fallon is something my parents could say. They could say to people, because for a long time I would be like on Kimmel and do a spot and be all proud and come home.
Yeah.
And friends would be like, so your parents tell us you're writing for Jay Leno. And I was like, what? No, but I was on Kimmel, and they're like, oh, okay, whatever. But they just didn't know how to say he was on Jimmy Kimmel. So when I was writing on Fallon, they were like, okay, we can tell people that, and they know. And then when I was on the roast, they said people would come and knock on the door and say, I saw your son last night. And they'd be like, oh, he's a nice boy. And they'd be like, no, we get it. Like, he's great. Like, and so when neighbors were coming to them, they were cool.
Wow.
But being a comedian's embarrassing until it's not anymore.
Totally.
You know?
I had so many friends from high school and college. The first however many years going back home to Seattle or even being out here from where I went to school, they'll be like, so you're still doing it? And I was like, yeah, it's been 4 years, you know, so it takes a minute. It does, huh? Yeah, because I was like, I haven't seen them on any billboards or you haven't been in any specials yet. Well, no, yeah, it's you get the special is what it is. Yeah, but you could be in somebody else's and that's like making it, right? Yeah, man, Spencer, this is why we don't talk a lot still. I hope you're picking up on. And then my mom, when I got my first TV gig, according to Jim, a guest star, she told everybody I was on the John Belushi show. Bragging to Subway sandwich artists that I'm on the John Belushi show.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. Okay, so the Fallon gig, by the way, I just want to stop at that. That to me is like, I think I remember hearing you talk about on a pod, maybe your pod, or getting that job, what?
Just calling it pod. It's a pod. Heard you on the pod. Like, I get it. Yeah. We were talking before I came in. I'm like, so, all right, tell me about the setup. Like, I'm just figuring out podcasting as
yeah,
I go.
You're just getting going, right?
I've been doing it for like 170 episodes, but it was all kind of audio, all kind of taken care of. And now we're branching out and seeing what's out there.
But, gotcha. But you've been doing podcasts forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But your podcast, the Jeselnik and Rosenthal Vanity Project. Mm-hmm.
JRVP.
Where does where's the title come from, first of all? It's with your buddy Greg Rosenthal mm-hmm. from the NFL Network.
Yeah.
Longtime best friend, you told me.
Yeah, 20-some years. He's at the NFL doing stuff, and he does like this big podcast. And I was like, let's do one together. And this was years and years ago. And we went to the NFL, and it was the Rosenthal and Jeselnik like Vanity Project. It was just kind of a lark. Like, the NFL like didn't want us there. We were like going in under the cover of night and recording, not getting paid, but just having fun.
They didn't want you there, what? Just using
because
their space?
Everything I said on the podcast was like inflammatory, that if anyone higher up who had listened to it, people would have been fired.
Wow.
We were like making fun of Roger Goodell, like making fun of the NFL, and they're very so strict about what they can get away
so
with.
So strict. I was doing a sports comedy podcast with Mark Sanchez for a little bit, and Showtime eventually pulled the plug after about 20 episodes because they were like, you know what? We just really don't want that much comedy in our football,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think most sports comedy combo packs have just struggled. Yeah.
Oh, like, it's terrible.
At the end of the day, people, I mean, you tell me. I mean, did you watch Norm's sports show when it was on?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I liked it, but it was very Norm.
Totally.
And I kept wondering, like, why is he doing a sports show?
Yeah.
You know, why isn't he just doing his own show?
Yeah. It's just tough. People, I think at the end of the day, just take it too seriously. And they're like, I don't want. It's like when Dennis Miller went in the booth for Monday Night Football. Like, and I don't know if that was the right guy to be in there. But at the end of the day, it's just so serious, right?
And there's something goofy about joking around about sports. So like, what if the football was a baseball? Like, it just like, this is sucks.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, Comedy Central used to try it back in the day, and it was always bad.
Right.
That it's just, it's not fun.
Wait, so having a best friend of 20 plus years,
mm-hmm.
that's impressive to me. I meet people in a crowd sometimes where they'll tell me of like, you know, a two, even, like grown men in their 40s and 50s, they're like, we just became friends. But it's like 2 years, like a new friendship, and they're best friends at that stage in life, which that is a feat in and of itself. But to me, like, I feel like it's rare to have. I got a couple buddies back home from Seattle that we've been friends since first grade. One's gonna be the best man at my wedding, and people are, when I share that info, they're like, oh, I don't talk to anybody from back in the day anymore. That's incredible. And I'm like, is it? I guess I lucked out with like a decent crop to pick from, and like, you know, it's a two-way street to keep in touch and all that. But I don't know,
Yeah, we just kind of connected in a different way from my other friends in college, my other friends in high school, and just kind of like grew up together.
Was it like one incident or like vacay or weekend that kind of cemented the friendship?
We were pledged to the same fraternity,
yeah,
and kind of became friends that way. We were both kind of like the funny guys.
Yeah.
And then sophomore year, beginning of school at Tulane, there was a hurricane warning and where people evacuated the city.
Oh, shit.
And there were two cars. I lived in a house with five guys. Greg was one of them. And we're like, we got to get out of here. We got two cars. My one friend is in like this amazing like luxury SUV, leather seats, AC. And he's got like four guys in that car. And Greg has got to take his like fucking like Nissan Sentra. It was like barely running. And he's like, please ride with me. So I rode with him. We didn't have AC. We had to turn the heat on so the car wouldn't overheat. And we're in like a 10-hour drive to Houston, just in traffic, right behind the fucking SUV.
Oh, my God.
Where they're just having a blast. And we bonded. Like, we talked about everything under the sun that we could.
Wow.
And then on the way back, he was like, you want to ride with me again? I was like, yeah. And then we've just been best friends ever since.
Wow.
That was really like,
yeah, you
bond here.
That's incredible. I mean, there's versions of that story where there's guys that like, we, you know, hiked Mount Rainier and there was a fucking blizzard and we had to suck each other off for warmth. And you're like, mm-hmm, that's also a story of bondage for sure. This one sounds, you know, way more fun. But when you're faced with like elements like that, where you just truly have nothing but yourselves in conversation, mm-hmm, like, yeah, you have no choice. Yeah.
Comics will be like, what would it take for us to be friends? And I mean, we'd have to be in a bad situation together. If we're just doing a show where like the green room's fucked up, you know, or like someone yells at us, or we have some kind of crazy, like, we've got to get out of here situation, that's a bond.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
That's why the road is so, I feel like, imperative when you're, I mean, in general, right? Like when you're trying to, you know, opening for somebody or just trying to get to know anybody. I think getting out of the bubble of wherever you're at is important.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I feel like you and I have probably had, I want to say maybe like not even double digits conversations,
yeah,
until the other night. And then it was like a very happenstance, like Comedy Store, main room, green room, which the store, any comedy club, and you tell me, like, you're, you know, out all the time, you know, is there a time and a place to like get to know somebody or talk to somebody? Because there's so much foot traffic all the time. Mm-hmm. There's times where I've been in conversations with you and three other people and like, you know, maybe there'll be a back and forth with you and I, but then somebody else comes up that I don't really know, but you're really tight with. And then I just, I'm like, this is my cue,
yeah,
you know? And I just try to read the room on that. And then being in the green room, it was just us. And I was like, well, this is how anybody should like hope to have the beginnings of a back and forth. We have like no distractions and nobody coming in with like some extraneous bullshit, or somebody comes in, like I said, like that knows one of us better, that kind of just rips it apart. So that's always cool. And that's what I love about the store too, is that like you just get those moments, mm-hmm, where, and then hopefully, you know, you don't say the fucking wrong thing when you were like, how you doing, man? Like if I had opened with, ah, oh, fuck, I got this like domestic abuse thing. Like, you know, if I had opened with something to make you go, yeah, cool, man, I'm going to go over my jokes if you don't mind.
Yeah.
You did give me I don't want to get too into it, but I want to at least allude to it. When I brought you on stage, you tag team at the Comedy Store and I'm bringing you on stage and I'm going to say the quote. And we'll just like leave it at that. And, you know, who knows, maybe down the line, really dig into it. But there's a story of something that kind of occurred with me and another comedian a while back. And a few homies know about it. And so there's a couple key quotes from that. One of them being, the quote being, if you keep pressing pause,
yep,
you're not going to get to hit play, which is what somebody said to me, which is hilarious.
An amazing quote. Like when I heard it, I was just so happy.
You were.
I said it all the time. I've said it on my podcast.
Wow.
Like I opened my podcast,
yeah,
with like a quote, just being like, I just said that. And my partner was like, what does that mean? I'm like, oh, it's just someone I always make fun of said that quote. It doesn't mean a fucking thing.
Yeah.
But he said it like it was just like this with gravitas.
Holy grail,
like,
yeah.
Oh my God, if I keep hitting pause,
yeah,
I won't be able to hit play, but you can. There's no rule that like you don't open up your VCR and they're like, don't hit pause too much. You can't watch any movies. Like, it's not a thing.
Oh, it was. It's also the getting get from people in your business and you're that aren't like too much older. Just getting any sort of like slap on the wrist from a comrade or somebody in a way like that was a very like looking down, pointing, but so funny that I couldn't even really get mad about it. You know what I'm saying? And so I'm glad that you...
Oh, you're just like, I've got this story. I can't wait to tell people this.
I know.
And I love... Like, when I heard, like, we've got a friend in common.
Yeah.
Who told me this story. Yes. And I was just like, tell me more. Like, tell me everything
there
is. And it's just,
you got the full scoop.
This person is like a fountain of... like amazing stories. If it was like an unauthorized biography, I would read the shit out of it.
So Anthony's bringing, I'm bringing him on stage, and he pulled me close. And the first, and this is what was so great about it, is like, I honestly, like, again, like, we just had this, like, first kind of lengthy, longer than, you know, maybe even the first of, you know, 10-minute conversation, maybe, where I'm like, fuck, I've always liked the guy. Very cool to add a little rapport to now, like, the encounters. And then I'm, you know, doing my thing on stage, and I'm bringing it up, and real fired up to bring it out, and you stop and pause and just pull me in close. And I was, like, taken aback, because I was like, oh, shit, like, first time bringing you out, like, to the main room. So I'm like, and now he's going to, like, I don't know if it was just going to be a quick, good set, but you were real stoic, you know, as you are, and you pull me close, and you just go, if you keep pressing pause, you're not going to be able to hit play. And I fucking didn't put it together where it was from. So I literally go, I laughed first because I just assumed it was something funny. But then also I heard it and attached it to where I know it's from, but was like, there's no way it's that. And so then I laughed uncomfortably and then walked off and then was like, fuck, was he telling me to, like, slow down? Like, I know sometimes I can get a little, you know, my pace picks up when I was definitely trying to jam in a few more bits in my last couple minutes on stage. So I went home being like, fuck. And I was like, all right, you know what though? Hey, if there's I like the guy, and if that's somebody that's going to throw me a dime of wisdom, I'm taking it. And I went home and I told my fiance, I was like, yeah, it was real cool. Like, he took time to tell me to fucking slow down and, like, work on my pace. And she's like, that's cool. I was like, yeah, it was cool. And then come to find it was that. So
yeah, you DM'd me, and I just got on Instagram a few months ago. So
oh, cool.
I'm like, I don't even know about DMs and all that shit. So Liz was like, oh yeah, Adam DM'd you. He said you gave him, like, great advice. And I was like, what? What? Because when I said that to you, I felt like you weren't ready for me to, like, make a joke or say anything. So it was kind of like, what? You know, so someone, like, says something in passing, you're just like, oh yeah, cool, man. You have no idea what they said.
Totally.
Like, that's what happened.
Yes.
And then when your DM, I think it was a voice memo, you're like, hey, thanks, man. I've been trying to slow it down a little bit. I'm like, it's so funny you would think. I'd be like, hey, slow down, Adam. We don't know each other at all, but I'm going to tell you how to do your act.
Bro, but I hope that that lands with you, that I was not offended at all by that. Mm-hmm. So it's all, it's all intent and purpose when you're trying to, like, say or do anything. And it's like, and being a nice person and likable goes a long way, because no part of me was like, fuck this guy. This is the first time I brought him on stage and he's trying to tell me how to pace it up. But looking back in hindsight, very funny dude. And someday the full beginning, middle, and end will be told to, if you keep hitting pause. I couldn't even have you had moments like that in your life? Because, I mean, you tell me, man, it's like, you know, comedy's subjective. Once you got into this and really found who you were on stage, and correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like it happened for you pretty early, yeah? I feel like you've been Anthony Jeselnik, like, and your style, your cadence, your delivery has been, you locked in on that pretty early.
Yeah, it took me like a year, maybe a little over a year, to figure out, like, dark, like, jokes, and the persona just kind of, like, formed around that.
Wow.
And it was just...
So you wrote dark jokes first, and then...
I was absurd jokes. At first, I was like, I took a class where they, like, talk about your life, and I'm like 22. I'm like, my life's not interesting. I can't tell anyone how to vote. I can't tell people, like, this different stuff, and no one wants to hear about my life. I'm sick of telling the same story over and over again. And I love Jack Candy's Deep Thoughts.
Yeah. Oh,
so I would obsessed. Write, I would read them and write my own versions, and they were kind of absurd and silly.
What a great exercise.
Yeah. And then one day I wrote a dark one with a dark twist. And
remember what it was?
Yes. God, my girlfriend loves to eat chocolate. She's always eating chocolate, and she likes to joke she's a chocolate addiction. She'll be like, haha, keep me away from those Hershey's bars. And it's really annoying. So one day I put her in the car and I drove her downtown and I pointed out a crack addict. And I said, you see that, honey? Why can't you be that skinny? And the open mic audience.
Wow.
It was just all open mic comics waiting for their turn. Just went, oh. They didn't laugh. They just went, oh. And I was like, that's it. Short, dark, like, don't be too silly, but, like, get in there, and that is what I want.
Holy shit. That was at what age?
23, 24.
Wow. So a couple years in.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What sort of weight lift off your shoulders is that to go, I know, now it's just about, and you already know how to write the joke? I mean, that's a fucking great joke.
Even telling the story now, I can picture myself, like, driving home in the car from, like, Jennifer's Coffee in Studio City, the open mic I was at on, like, a Saturday night, and just being, like, fired up. So pumped.
Dude, it's like you saw, like, it's like you got the, you found the treasure before you had the treasure map.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good analogy?
Not really.
All right. We'll edit this out. But I think that there's, wow, that's fucking, yeah, because I mean, that's the name of the game, right? Is like being on stage, getting reps, writing to try to find your point of view and who you are on stage, right? Like, mm-hmm. and you got it that quick. That's dope. And I feel like very rare.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I was searching for it so hard. I wasn't like, I'm going to put my time in. I was like, how can I make this time as short as possible? Not out of laziness, but out of like, I just want to...
Make the time, your time on stage?
Not time, just like time in general. Like, oh, you start at 22, you're not going to be good until you're 30. Like, let's see if I can cut that down to like 24.
Wow,
you know, where like, they don't know any better. I'm going to pretend I'm like a comedy genius and I'm going to do every open mic I can. I'm going to write more than other people to try to like cut that time down. Now, so when I found that shortcut, I was like, this is it.
The confidence and the swagger that you possess on stage, likable, rubs some people the wrong way, right?
Sure.
You know that going in,
mm-hmm.
but it's also how you look, how you sound, right?
But I'd rub people the wrong way without that swagger or confidence. As soon as they saw me on stage at 22, 23, they did not like me. Maybe they weren't like booing, but they were just like, oh, this fucking guy. Because every comic looked like an uglier version of me. You know, so yeah. It's like the whole lineup is just that. Then yeah. I'm like, okay, let's be a villain.
What are
being
problems?
A villain is fun.
Fuck yeah,
it's
dude.
Fun that I was like, oh, this is I've hacked something. And people would be like, you know, you shouldn't be so mean. And I was like, wait, like, I understand what you're saying. I'm not going to be in a Disney movie, but I don't want that. I don't care.
Do you think there? Well, and they're also like, you know, having a harder edge to your style, you can't also be like, you know, you've got there's an affable quality to you on the exterior to where it's like you're not up there and you smile from time to time, which I think helps
mm-hmm.
at least from you know, an audience viewing standpoint. If you're up there looking like, yeah, I don't know, Joaquin Phoenix with a full beard and like a black coat and you're being like, yeah, then maybe it's like you still have to be somewhat likable on stage, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy that you calculated all that. That's very fascinating to me to know this is how I'm going to deliver jokes. So that's my next question. Your cadence. Again, even talking about trying to slow down. I from the get-go when I saw you on stage and even to this day, just, you know, have a lot. It's not my style, but I have a lot of admiration for people that take their time like that because I just don't do it and I don't think I'm capable of doing it. There's been sets where I've had like, I've been losing my voice or I've been, you know, and it's made me like sit on the stool more or less and really take my time. And I have a couple buddies be like, that was the best I've ever seen you. And then that makes me go, fuck, and then I'm whatever. But did you make it a choice to go, all right, now that I've got the, you know, the joke format more or less, or like knowing what my beats are going to be, like the time I want to spend on stage and the style I want to, you know, be up there to deliver. Did you make a conscious choice to go, you know, I'm always going to try to go slower? Like, did somebody tell you that? Were you going faster and then decided, or did the kind of the joke style kind of force you to kind of take your time?
It was really the best way to deliver that joke and to have the audience on my side. I like playing with the silence. And when the audience is hanging on your every word, I'm trying to get them to go right so I can go left. You know, I want to lead them down the wrong path and then switch it up. The talking that way really helped. And people were like, you talk so slow. It's like, yeah, that's commanding a crowd.
Fuck yeah, I know.
I can stop talking and they're all just like, it's dead silent.
It's crazy. That's like, it's a superpower.
If a joke bombs and they're still silent, like, okay. It's when they start talking that you're fucked. You know, and people would say you talk like Christopher Walken. And I loved Christopher Walken. I still do. But I thought it was just a fun way to talk. And he just sounded interesting when he did it. And I thought that was why I talked that way. Because you could hide the punchline better.
Mm.
If your cadence was a little off. But then I found out a couple of years ago, my dad gets that. People like, you talk like Christopher Walken. And I'm just like, oh yeah, I get that too. And I'm like, oh, is it a family thing?
Holy
shit.
It's not
like a Pittsburgh thing. I think it might just be genetic. I don't know.
And you always been comfy in the silence? Because that's the trickiest part, I feel like, for any young comic. And it just, you know.
I mean, timing is like a natural thing. Like, you just know when to start talking again, when to deliver the punchline. I don't know how you would even describe it to someone of how it works, but it just always kind of worked for me.
So you start writing on Fallon. You come out here after college, yeah?
Yeah.
You partied. You're like, fuck, now I got
to
like.
I didn't have money to party. I was like, oh, let's try to find a job. Could not. I was working at retail and I was working at a bookstore and I thought, I was thinking about stand-up comedy. And there was a book by Greg Dean. It was like, there were like five books about stand-up or how to be a stand-up. And I picked the thinnest one. And I took that home and read it. And I was like, okay, here's joke structure. Take the mic out, whatever. And at the end of the book, it was like, this guy teaches a class in Santa Monica. So I just started taking the course. And I didn't tell my friends or anything for a month. And then was like, guys, I have to tell you something. Like, I'm taking a stand-up class. And they were all like, yeah, you'll be great at that. I was like, oh, okay. I thought this was like embarrassing.
Whoa.
And then just started getting into it from there.
What a funny thing to be, that your friends are going to like judge you for, like, because it's something that, again, if you have no, you had nobody in the family or
no
prior connections when you got to LA of, hey, talk to Dana. She's got the.
The only one, my dad went to college with a guy named Jimmy Brogan, who at the time. Yes. You know Jimmy? Yeah.
Just saw him like a month ago.
Yeah.
Legend.
They went to Notre Dame together and he was writing, a head writer for Leno.
Yes.
And I came out here in between like my junior and senior year to visit LA. And the only meeting I had was Jimmy Brogan. And he and my dad hadn't spoken in like 40 years. But he had a meeting with me at the Improv. I watched his set. And he was like, what do you want to do? I was like, I want to be a joke writer. I want to be a writer. And
talking
I thought
the
he
right would, guy, by the way.
Yeah. And I thought he was going to say, all right, come to the Tonight Show. I'll get you an internship. And you'll work in the writer's room. None of that. He just goes, do stand up. That way, instead of writing your jokes down and trying to get someone to read it, you can just like, you can tell people your jokes and it helps you figure out how to word them perfectly and you'll find your voice that way. And I was like, okay, but this isn't what I wanted out of this.
Yeah.
But years later, I was finally like, okay, let's do stand up.
Wow.
I have nothing out here. I got nothing to lose. But there's a certain kind of person who tries stand up.
Yeah.
Like one of the main reasons I didn't quit was because the idea of quitting was so embarrassing. I used to do stand up. I wasn't going to be that guy.
Ugh.
I wasn't going to do it.
We know those people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. That's your journey.
You ever have, you're talking to someone like, oh, you're stand up? I thought about that. I thought about doing that. And you're like, oh, we're the same.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just like me.
Yeah, I performed at the Comedy Store in 2015. Yeah. Is John still there?
Yeah.
What? Yeah.
I've been doing it for 20 years. When's the last time you got on stage? 12 years ago. You haven't been doing it 20
years. The delusion. I know. I take... Did you, I mean, I'm sure you are now, like, do you get, I take a lot of pride in the hustle and grind that goes into it. Like, I feel like if anyone, I used to have kids from college want to sit me down and ask me the shortcuts, basically be like, how do I get it to be a regular at the store? I'm like, you've been doing it 3 months. And they're like, yeah, but I feel like I'm done with these bringer shows and these open mics. I'm like, you're not. But just the fact that you're asking me how to get ahead and you're not just like wanting to, you know, have time, be your best friend. I don't want to tell you not to do it. But stop.
Yeah, there's no like, it's not, people are like, what did you do? I'm like, you can't do what I did. Because at the time, it worked for me, but it wouldn't work for you. Like, there wasn't TikTok or social media back when I started. Mm. You had to kind of do this one hustle. And there's so many different ways. People who make so much more money than me, who are so much worse than me, because they just found a different path. I don't want to tell you anything.
Sure.
But I will tell people, like, someone will come to the Comedy Store and be like, I'm a huge fan. Like, what do I need to do? And I'm like, stop hanging out here. Like, don't hang out at the store, because then you're just the guy who hangs out at the store. Go do open mics. Go get better until people are like, oh, I don't know that guy. That guy's funny. It takes for a long time, but I never asked anyone, like, what should I be doing? Because I was afraid. And I'm glad I was afraid.
Yeah.
Because the idea of, I wanted to sit someone down, but can I take you to lunch and just ask what I should be doing? Like, don't do that.
It's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hang out? Did you think that was like an important thing when you were around here, around clubs?
No, never. I didn't really have friends in the open mic scene. And I just thought, I'm going to go home and write. I'm going to always be writing. And I would write so many, I would write, because I didn't have my voice down exactly yet. Like now I'm working on my fifth hour right now.
Yeah.
So I'll be like, okay, I've written a joke about that already. You know, I've gotten so many topics are off limits to me now.
Oh, so you're really trying to look at the game tape and go, I want to make sure that this special is hitting new. It's fresh from top to bottom. Yeah.
And even it's just fresh for me. Like, and after, on my fifth hour, I'll write a joke and be like, that's great. And be like, oh, fuck, I told that two specials ago.
Oh, wow.
You know, that I can't just be switching them out.
So out of Greg Dean's class, is there a moment where, like, you probably do the graduation show at the Improv or something like that? Or West Side? I don't know.
Yeah, I did at the Belly Room.
Yeah. And so was that a aha moment? Did you have people come out and see you? Was it like getting a taste of a real stage out here, right? Like probably kickstarted
everything?
I
brought all my friends with like 8 people in LA at the time. And they had me go last. And I was like, I'm the best one. Not realizing it's because I brought the most people. But everyone, it was like 10 people. Everyone kind of tanked, but the audience wants to root for them.
Oh yeah.
And then I went up and in my mind, I killed. Like they gave me the tape. I remember being like, I would send that tape to everyone. I'm like, you got to see this tape. You got to see it. And then years ago, I did a roast. When I did the roast of Donald Trump, one of the jokes I used against Donald Trump was from my first ever stand-up set. I went back and I was like, oh my God, I remember that. I'm going to use this. And it killed. So I was like, I wonder if there's any other gems in there. And I watched it and had a panic attack. Like literally wanted to throw up watching how clearly nervous I was. How I was dressed, how I talked, how I acted, like heavy Dennis Leary influence that I didn't remember having, and was just truly embarrassed about the way that I performed. That was my first time on stage.
Yeah.
And I thought in my mind I killed, and I thought, oh, I have this 7-minute like magical set, and I went to the Ice House like 2 weeks later, and tried to like to do the 5 minute open mic thing and bombed so hard. Like 7 minutes went by in like 2 minutes. And I truly did have a panic attack, went in the bathroom, threw up, had to like splash water on my face, like towel myself off. And then I did not get back on stage again for months. I would go to open mics and not get out of my car. And then I saw the movie Comedian with Jerry Seinfeld. Mm. I lived around the corner from the movie theater right down here, and went and saw it like 4 times in like 2 weeks. And I was like, got it. This is just like, just keep writing, keep performing.
Holy shit.
The more
shit.
You do it, and just never stopped.
Holy shit, dude. That documentary was very influential on me as well.
Huge.
I love to hear you say that that really like turned a corner for you. Because up until that point, I don't know, I don't feel like I'd seen any version or example of anybody at that level grinding.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't even think we were dealing with social media at that time, were we?
Oh, one of the most inspiring things I've ever seen was like Demetri Martin bomb at like a show in LA. Like, I was such a huge fan of his, and he came to LA to do some like little show. He was trying out new stuff and just bombed, and I ran home and like emailed all my friends being like, we can do this too. I just saw this guy that I like look up to so much just eat shit like we do. We can do this.
That's so and important, that
was
huh?
It was so much more inspiring than seeing like someone just destroy. You only see the special. You don't see like the what it took to get there. That I worship that movie Comedian.
It's almost like you need like big time actors to post like their early audition tapes or something, just so we can see like, you know, I don't know, Will Smith pre-slap, like maybe he had some shitty fucking hitch chemistry reads.
Someone had a joke. They were like, I think when they do like best actor, best actress supporting, whatever, they should have like a clip of them in the movie and then a clip of them just being normal so you can see how much they're acting. Like, yeah, you should just see like Timothée Chalamet like at breakfast, you know, to be like, what? How much are you changing yourself to be in this thing?
That's
we don't know.
Fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's, I mean, because even when you get those guys on like a late night couch, there's still a heightened version. Like, it's not.
Oh, have you ever done like a, have you ever been on the couch on
once,
late night?
Yeah.
It's brutal. Yeah. It's like, I didn't know. It's like, sometimes it goes great. Sometimes it's like truly death.
Yeah, I did truly Ferguson. Death. That's the only one where it's just all improv, which was fun to me, but also, yeah, more terrifying because I'm like, fuck, dude, what if I just, I'm trying to think it and say it and not second guess. So what if that, you know, no Brita in between my thoughts. And what if the one thing I say is the thing that gets me banned from?
Oh, I always feel like I'm flailing for like 5 or 6 minutes.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And the last time I did it, for my last special, I went on Seth Meyers and Kimmel. And I had like stories that I had been workshopping on stage.
Oh, great.
To just go out and just tell.
Because super
I just
smart.
Wasn't going to like leave it up to that. And I burned like 20 minutes of the could be material. You know, I could be taping a special right now if I had kept that. But I was like, no, it's so painful to be on these couches. I need to have something where I just destroy.
Oh, bro. That's a huge advantage to have that wherewithal, because there's actors that go on these couches. You know, fuck, even somebody like, you might get like a Danny Glover, who's like a charismatic guy, but maybe like he sits down and maybe he's just like not, doesn't have a lot to talk about. So he's like, yeah, there's one time at a vending machine, I wanted Doritos. Oh yeah, what happened? It gave me a Kit Kat instead. Like, we're just going to go to commercial break. That's also not a great Danny Glover impression.
That's the worst Danny Glover impression.
but you know what I'm saying is like having some preparation, I think, is key. Are you like that in general? Like, we talked about pre-show, you got here very prompt and you said, I hate being late, which I respect and dig. Is that, does that fall in line with like a list of like Jeselnik like things that I will abide by, like being on time?
I think it's like you touch the stove, you know it's hot, you don't do it again. Like, I get anxiety about being late, about like looking for parking, like I'm fucking this up, even if it doesn't matter at all. I could have been 20 minutes late, it would have been fine. But if I don't know the area, like where I'm going, like
it would have been.
Yeah, just like, I'm stressing out about it. That I'm like, eliminate that stress.
Right.
And going up and being unprepared. Like, I still have nightmares about bombing on stage because I'm not prepared.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I've got notes in my pocket, but I don't look at them. I'm like, I'll be fine. I have time. And all of a sudden, it's time to go on stage and I can't remember like how to start the joke or how to finish the joke. And it's awful that I don't let that happen. Like, I've got a set list in my pocket for the shows tonight that are like, I type out and print out a new one every day.
No kidding.
New jokes on it. So I'm like, I'm ready.
And let me ask you, is it just like bullet points? Is it like a one word? Like, what's a...
I name the jokes that... and sometimes if I haven't done the joke in a while, I look and I'm like, clapping. Like, what is clapping? I've had to sometimes Google. If I take some time off, I have to Google like Jeselnik and then the name of the joke and hope it comes up. And sometimes it does. And I'm like, years ago, I was like, nuns, what is nuns? And then I like Googled it and I did it on some show.
So you label your set list cards like you would an album.
Mm-hmm.
like, you know, like, you know, track one is this. Wow, that's helpful.
Yeah, I'll show it to you.
Yeah. That's probably a, I mean, this type of, the type of shit you could probably like laminate and sell it at your shows, no?
I thought about it, but then it like ruins the experience. You know, like that's, wow, those are those, that's the set list. And then these are the new ones that I'm trying out.
And you'll hit, okay, so this is all just stuff to work out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. And you have it up there with you, or you?
I always have it with me. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like if I'm on like doing an hour, I have it taped to the stool so you don't really see it. I look at it when I take a drink of water. But
yeah, that's,
but yeah, I always take it out.
I went back and forth on that for a minute because I was such a, maybe it was me coming from the acting world being like, you got to be prepared with your performance. But then I'm like, when I started doing hours and headlining, I was like, fuck, man. Like there's stuff I definitely want to get in here that's newer and I'm trying to like remember that it's going to go here. And sometimes you just don't. And like, why wouldn't you want to make sure you hit everything?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way to do it without losing momentum of the show. That's just another, you know, challenge that you have to like factor in and figure out to make the show work. But
for me, it really works because I mean, it's so start and stop. It's like one joke, next subject here. And if I tell people I'm trying out new stuff and I literally read it, they love it. People enjoy seeing the process. And if a joke bombs, they laugh at me being like, oh, of course. Like, I don't know why I thought that would be funny.
Yeah.
That it's, people don't mind with me so much. But if I was like, I'm just up here talking, like, I think it would be disingenuous and annoying.
I'm just
but
up I'm here just, like, talking. Here. Also, I'm just, you've said two titles of specials or documentaries that I would love to see made on the people we were referring to. They're like, yeah, I've been doing stand-up 20 years. Last time was about 60 years ago. Is In My Mind I Killed is a documentary about all those people that say they do stand-up and don't do it really anymore. Mm-hmm. But we get them all together for one big show. Or what was the one you just said? I said, fuck.
I thought about doing that?
No. Shit. Something tied to that person that... I thought about doing that. What was it? What else? Fuck. I had the second title right there. Weed does affect your brain. And I want to tell the kids watching that everything in moderation, because there'll be times when you're in a podcast and you want to really, you see the smirk grow on your guest going, oh, I'm fired up for this little bit that he's about to do. And then it completely dies and you go, oh, maybe it's time to reel back a little. Maybe edibles are the move. But, you know, your dog did eat them that one time. And, yeah, did it turn into a great bit? Yeah, she's alive. But do you smoke a lot of pot? And that's it. I went flat. Guys, the NFL is back. The action is in full swing. And here at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, baby, we're talking touchdowns, big plays, sideline dances, sacks, and even bigger wins. Right now, new customers just like you and me.
And me?
Yeah, Grandpa, can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win and get $200 in free bets if they do. That's insane. Everyone can boost their winnings with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Right now, for every leg you add, you can boost your winnings up to 100% with bigger payouts than ever before. And look, the question begs itself to be asked. Why bet on football anywhere else? To make things even sweeter, you can throw down on stepped up same game parlays once per game day all season long. So if you want to get into this and start betting and making some winnings and enjoying Sunday a little bit more, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code ABOUT to get $200 in free bets. Good God, $200 in free bets right now. If you use the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use the promo code ABOUT, $200 and free bets right now if your team wins when you place a $5 bet on any football game. That's the promo code ABOUT, only at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. That's in Illinois, Indiana, Los Angeles, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Wyoming. 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's for Arizona. 1-800-522-4700, that's Colorado and New Hampshire. 888-789-7777 /http://ccpg.org/chat, that's Connecticut. 1-800-BETS-OFF, that's Iowa. 877-8-HOPE. HopeNY/text, HopeNY 467-369. That's New York. Visit OPGR.org. That's Oregon. Call or text Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. That's Tennessee. Or 1-888-532-3500. That's Virginia. 21 plus, 18 plus, New Hampshire, Wyoming. Physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Connecticut, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Los Angeles. Select parishes. Michigan, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming only. New customer offer void in New Hampshire, Oregon, Ontario, California. New customers only. Valid one per new customer. Minimum $5 deposit. Minimum $5 wager. $200 issued as eight $25 free bets. Option in required. One stepped up same game parlay token issued per eligible game. Minimum $1 bet. Max bet limits apply. Minimum three leg. Each leg min 300 odds. Total bet 100 odds or longer. Profit boosted up to 100%. 10 plus legs for 100% boost. See TNC at sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms. Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast, and I'm sitting down because I got some big news. Usually I'm standing up to do comedy, but I'm sitting down now because I got the deal of a lifetime. First of all, sitting is bad for you. We all know that, whether we're sitting on planes or sitting on a beanbag chair watching porn in front of our kids. There's just too much damage you do on the body. Thankfully, Axion has come up with a chair that allows your pelvis to move the way it does while you walk. So all 33 vertebrae align into perfect posture. The result? Better breathing, better blood flow, and relief from the pain. It's crazy what you can do when you set your body to do it. Now, these guys are homies of mine. My buddy Dennis worked with the Clippers as their doctor for 27 years. He runs a wellness center called Peak Wellness. He's a fucking gangster and has saved me from surgery numerous times. I actually met Justin Bieber at his place, and I was in my boxers getting cupping done, and Bieber and I locked eyes, and I was like, this is how we were supposed to meet, and Bieber smiled, and I never saw him again. This chair is a game changer. It's changed the way I live, it's changed the way I breathe, the way I sit, and you guys right now can get that chair for 25% off using the promo code ALN25 at all33.com. It's incredible. You got to get it. It's the only chair out there to get. We will be getting them for the studio. Go to all33.com and use promo code ALN25 for 25% off this chair. Do you smoke a lot of pot?
I used to.
Yeah.
No, I took a lot of time off. I quit drinking about like 5 months ago.
You talk about that, yeah.
Didn't smoke pot that whole time. And then lately I've been like kind of dipping back into pot.
I was going to say, like, what's everyone has advice. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I have to misbehave in some way. Maybe it's like a nicotine lozenge, but I've got to have something that's like my little secret treat. You know?
There it is, my little secret treat. And in my mind, I killed. There's the drinking days. I hit 40, in June. And I don't know if it was that number or leading up to it, I could feel. Even at 38, I was like, oh, this is slowing down big time. Mm-hmm. And it's, obviously just because of the recovery process, but also you're like, well, I'm getting busier and I don't want to look like shit and I don't want to feel like shit. Your body just can't handle the rigmarole. I remember when I first started going on tour with Adam Devine, an Omaha boy, they were drinking since they were like 12. And I was like, and I said right after that first tour, I go, you guys show me what my liver is truly capable of handling because I've never drank like that in my entire life. And there's times when it's just like, it's always got to be social for me. But when you stopped, it was because what? Was it becoming not fun?
No, it was fun.
You're a fun guy to drink with.
I'm sure. Yeah, I'm definitely not a sad drunk or like an angry drunk.
Oh, great.
I'm a fun time.
Yeah,
but
like a karaoke fun?
No, I don't never karaoke. But
by the way, duh.
Yeah.
But also, I feel like you get you in the right city with the right crew and the right shot of something. And somebody's birthday that tugs at your heartstring, maybe you get up and maybe you sing something.
I always say this, like, if you see me dancing, like, call the ambulance because I'm about to fucking die. Like, it does happen occasionally, but I'm wasted.
Yeah.
But I just started looking around, like, I don't know about you, but I still think, if someone's like, how old are you? I want to say 25.
Bro,
like,
yeah.
And I'm telling the truth.
Bro, yeah.
And I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, I'm 43. But when I see older people, and we know a lot of people who like probably should not be drinking.
Sure.
We're not be drinking in public. And they're just like, the smile's too big. They're a little sweaty.
Yeah.
They're just like, they can't get their words out. And I'm just like, oh, that it gets sad.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to do that. And during the pandemic, I had been sober for like 5 months because I just had a lot to do. I was doing a TV show. I was touring. I was doing all this stuff. And I wasn't drinking. And the pandemic hit. And they were like, all right, your TV show is done. Like, go home. And I was like, oh. And just stopped at a restaurant and had martinis. I was like, okay, this is something's happening here. I don't have anything to do for a while. And just drank my way through the pandemic.
Wow.
I got a dog and everything. I wasn't like too bad. But at the end of that, I was like, this doesn't feel good, but I'll just stick to beer. You know, I'll just drink after shows. And then I went home to visit my family. I hadn't been home in a long time. And normally the whole family would sit around and drink. We weren't like, it wasn't crazy. It was like drinking beers, watching football games. But after the pandemic, like almost everyone in my family was sober for one reason or another. Some people were pregnant. Some people were just like had given it up over the pandemic. And I was the only one drinking. Oof. And I just was embarrassed. And then when I came home, I like drank on the flight home to LA. And then was just like, you know what? I'm done.
Wow.
I don't know if I never drink again, but it was just like, it's time. It felt good. It didn't feel like I was giving something up. It was like, okay.
Yeah.
Let me go walk.
Take control
door.
Of the moment. Did something happen on the plane with a flight attendant or a passenger that maybe also?
No, not this time. But I have.
Bummer.
I have had embarrassing moments on airplanes.
For real? Because of booze?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, that helped. Booze helped. Do you drink on airplanes?
Not like, I heard Bert say recently that he can't not, there's not a plane he hasn't been on where he hasn't drank. I probably drank on, I don't know, 50, not a lot. So no, I guess. I mean, at one every now and then. I did it, the last time I got hammered on a flight was to Australia. But that was super long, and yeah, myself and another guy on the show were up, and everybody was asleep, and there was a bigger area near the front of the plane, and the flight attendant was a big fan of his, and she just kind of turned it into a mini bar for us, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, but on like a 3-hour flight to KC tomorrow, I'll probably keep it clean.
Even then, I was like, well, what do I have to do when I get there? You know, it's free, and it's fun, and like you're getting dehydrated, so you get a little extra drunk. You have a great time. That I truly, and on the way back from a show. You know, when you just land in LAX and go home, like that's when I would really turn it on. And I realized like now it's like about being hydrated on a flight so I can just like get through the weekend better. Everything's helpful.
Right.
But I would bring this, I had this little vape pen. It was little like really nice vape pens that like, it was called Dosist.
Yeah.
And it was, I like loved them. And I would tell people, you can smoke this in an airplane bathroom and the alarm doesn't go off. It's amazing. And everyone's like, oh, cool. You're really into that. And I'm coming back from Denver. I did a theater in Denver, and I'm flying home, and I'm drinking. I'm like, I got my vodka rocks, and I go in the bathroom and hit the thing, and the alarm goes off.
Panic?
I was like, wait, what? Oh, fuck, it's me. And got out of the bathroom, flight attendant runs up, and they just say over the loudspeaker, like, do not vape or smoke in the bathroom. And but they don't know it's me, and I'm in first class, so I'm like, okay. But stupid me.
Oh, no.
I hit the button. And I'm like, I was in there when the alarm went off. I don't know what. And they're just like,
oh.
And when they land, they give me a note being like, you're in violation of federal law. And the cops came and took me off the plane and just like gave me like what happened. I'm like, I vaped in the bathroom. And they're like, okay. Like you got no warrants out for your arrest. So we're going to let you go.
Oh.
And totally fine. But I was so embarrassed that for days afterwards, I'd be walking around Hollywood. And I'd be like, someone would look at me and I'd be like, oh my God. They knew. Like, it was that bad.
They were on the flight.
And I never like vaped again.
So do you get embarrassed easily? Or just things like that that are make
things
you take
where
a look in the mirror.
I know I'm like truly wrong. Like if I just like fell down, I'm like, I felt like, get the fuck out of here. But if I'm like, if I'm vaping in the bathroom, something I know is wrong. And like if they had landed the plane, if they had not flown back to LA, I would have like, I would have fucking
spiraled.
Walked wherever I went.
For yeah.
That would have been brutal. I'm hoping no one recognizes me. Like I'm just like, this would be so bad. That's not a cool thing to get.
The vape guy. Yeah. Yeah. Fuck.
Brutal.
Yeah. Do you enjoy flying? Did you get used to that?
I always say it's like a grass is greener thing where if I'm stuck at home too long, I'm like, I want to get back on the road.
Me too.
And then you're on the road. You're like, we know it'd be great. It's just to stay at home
bed.
And not do anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Like when you're done with the tour and someone's like, what are you going to do for vacation? I'm like, nothing.
Yeah.
This is my vacation. Normally, the idea of getting on a plane and going to some resort is brutal to me.
Yeah.
If I'm flying, you better pay me to do that.
Yeah, because you mentioned you're getting ready to go on another big tour, which I'm pumped for you for. And I guess I'm just always curious. Like there's different ways to do it now, obviously. Plane, jet. Bus. Have you done the bus thing?
Never, but no. I hear it's great.
Yeah.
I hear it's great.
Do you think that would be a, would that like, you know, get you back into a booze type mindset? Because I feel like the bus thing is just like, it's inevitable at some point where cocktails are going to be flown.
I don't know, man. Like, I kind of like to be alone on the road. I don't like to bring friends.
Oh, really?
You know, I might have an opener.
Yeah.
You know, maybe have like one friend with me, but I'm not like, I don't have an entourage. So just the idea of just being on like a bus by myself, like
sounds glorious.
Someone play video games while I drink a bottle of vodka doesn't sound.
Does sound awesome. John Madden had the bus thing for a while. That was fucking rad.
Yeah,
truly everywhere. Did you watch that Madden doc?
No.
Oh my God. No. Is it called like Making Madden or Being John Malcolm Madden? It's incredible.
Is it like NFL football life?
Holy shit! Yeah, it was an ESPN. It came out. Ironically, a week after he passed. But it's phenomenal. I just had no idea the guy was you think of him as the video game, but also you just, you know, if you're a decent enough sports fan, you go, oh yeah, the Hall of Fame coach. But I mean, how he went from how beloved he was as a coach and then how much he crushed the commentating game unexpectedly. It was one of those things where he was so good so quick.
Yeah.
And just like got at people just were like, oh, actually, you're actually going to do these games. Oh, you're actually going to do, and you can do the Super Bowl. And now we're going to put you with another guy and you're going to be the voice of football pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then how he just turned into this like true brand. It's similar to the comedian doc, I'd say, where it's like getting to see how somebody became what they are is always cool, right? I don't know.
Oh, totally. It's inspirational.
What did you watch during the pandemic like that? Or what do you watch in general that's your guilty pleasure or your go-to? Or if you're having writer's block, I don't know, when you were writing for Fallon, which was what, just fucking thousands of jokes a day?
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you this. I wrote this one question down, and there's a bunch I've written down that we haven't gotten to at all because we're just flowing here. But how many jokes do you think you could write truly in a day if you were getting paid or not, and you just like, because you strike me as someone where they can just fucking flow out like 50 in an hour.
I could do, and this is no ego involved, hundreds if you give me the premises. That's what they would do on Fallon, and I think they do a lot of late night shows where the writer's assistant would go through and get all these different headlines and just send those to us. And I realized this writer named Alex Bays, who I really look up to, he's the head writer, I believe, on Seth Meyers right now. And at the time, he was the head writer on Weekend Update. He would come in and kind of help us out. Because in the beginning, when I got hired, it was only me and one other guy writing the monologue.
Now
it's like eight people. But at the time, it was just the two of us.
That's awesome.
We were having a hard time.
Really?
Like, it wasn't like, okay, these are the jokes, we'll pick out eight. It was like, we don't like these, write some more. And we're like, that was 8 hours of our best stuff. Now we have 2 hours. You think it's going to be better? Like, that's not how this works, but let's try. And
who's making that call, sorry, that throws out 8 hours? That's just straight Jimmy?
That it took us 8 hours to do them? Like, it was... We give Jimmy, like, jokes at, like, 10 or 11,
gotcha.
And he looks through it and picks, you know, some out of those.
Yeah.
And we need to have... And he'll run through in, like, a rehearsal that afternoon. But sometimes he'd like, eight of them, and we were in pretty good shape. Sometimes he's like, oh, we got 12 here. And sometimes it was, like, none of them.
Wow.
And that was rough.
Damn.
Yeah.
So they brought in this other kid, and he kind of helped you guys.
Yeah, they were just like, could you help us out? Or SNL was off for a week, he'd come in, and they'd pay him. And he would just take... He'd have the headline of the news article, delete everything after it, and then write his joke. And they were always great. And I was like, that's what I'm going to do.
Wow.
And so if you just give me those, it can be about like the interest rate. I'm going to give you a bad joke, but it's a joke. And it's like, well, I don't know what you want, so here's everything. But it wasn't that tough.
Yeah, I was. Did you enjoy... If you're not... Can it ruin the fun of joke writing if you're doing that for, like, you got out after what, a few years?
I did 1 year exactly and then bailed. And I knew almost immediately this was not for me. I liked everyone there. It was like a good experience. Jimmy was a great boss, but I was like, you don't want me. You didn't know your voice yet, but it's clearly not this. And the show was so successful right off the bat that they weren't looking to like change things up, but they weren't going to fire me. And I didn't know that. I always thought every 13 weeks I'm going to be out of here. But I couldn't write a joke for my own act for that whole year. I would get up to the Comedy Cellar every night because I didn't want to lose that muscle.
Yeah.
I heard of a lot of people who got the writing job and stopped doing stand-up.
Oof.
And I didn't want to do that. But I didn't write anything for myself. And after I left Fallon, it took me like a few months to like relax and be able to write for myself again. Luckily, my act is so different from Fallon that it didn't like have that much of an overlap. But it wasn't fun.
Almost a direct opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Did the show make you laugh? Let's move on. What does make you laugh? Getting back to the shows, like that you like to watch comedy wise, and then give me like dramas and shit like
that. Comedy wise, I truly, truly love I Think You Should Leave. I could watch I Think You Should Leave over and over again on a loop. I love it so much.
Me too.
That to me is just the best. And I can't think of a show that I've enjoyed anywhere close to it. Comedy just, it doesn't hit me right. Where I like a drama that has funny moments in it. Like I think Sopranos is one of the funniest TV shows of all time. Ooh. I love Succession now.
Yeah, me too.
That I, if you can put a joke into something very serious, like I love that.
Yes.
Remember Justified on
yeah,
FX? Like,
yeah.
Love that show. I thought that was hilarious, but it wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, anything comedy, I'm not watching Modern Family.
Because it's just too...
It's just not fun.
Yeah. There's something about Succession, like the writing on that. It's one of those total package shows where you're like, the acting's brilliant, the writing, they don't waste words. Mm-mm. Did you watch Tiger King? Are there things like that that you'll be a part of?
I heard about it and was just too late to be like, okay, I'm going to get into this.
That's how I was.
During the pandemic, I think I tried at one point, was like, no. Like Stranger Things, made it 30 seconds and was like, peace.
Haven't done that either. Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones I was into from day one.
I haven't done it. Should I?
Not now. It was great. I mean, at the time, you had to watch it. It was like the one thing you had to watch because the next day, it's like all these articles that I was into it. I've been watching House of Dragon, but not as like intently. But I got into reality TV during the pandemic.
There we go.
I had a friend who got me into Big Brother.
Yeah.
And which I never thought I would have watched, but I got really into Big Brother with several seasons. And The Challenge on MTV. The Challenge was like my shit.
Is it like Road Rules Real World?
That's how it started. Now it's just reality people that they bring in from like different countries. And it's like hot, dumb, super athletic people. And then some who aren't so athletic, just doing these competitions and then getting wasted at night and trying to fight each other. And
fight or fuck or no?
Yes.
By the way, there's a show title, Fight or Fuck, or just call it Hot Dumb Fuck, where it's just a bunch of hot, dumb fucks that try to fuck. We'll be right back. We'll keep it right here. Would you want to try to sell shows and make shows? Do you watch some of these things and go, all right, I now see, because I definitely, Netflix throws up so many rom-coms where I'm like, the formula is just like, rom-coms in general, I feel like it's pretty tough to find a completely new take.
Mm-hmm.
But do you enjoy rom-coms? Have you cried at a rom-com?
I don't think I've ever cried, but I've liked a few. You know, like My Best Friend's Wedding is good. There's a couple that I'm like, okay, this is like a rom-com that I can tolerate. You know, like Something About Mary is a rom-com. I love that.
Yeah, sweet. Have you cried at a movie ever in
general? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give me one. Don't say Jurassic Park 3 because we're on the podcast right now.
You know what? You know what movie made me fucking like bawl like a little fucking girl?
What's that?
And people were shocked. La La Land.
Oh,
the end when like they meet
say
up
no
and
more.
It's like they have
say
the no flashback more. To what yep. their lives could have been.
Say no more, dude.
I was like a fucking little girl.
Me too.
Lost it.
What does that say about us?
I don't know. It wasn't like a sad cry. It was just like, oh my God, this is like...
Because they were both happy.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not ashamed. I'm not one of those guys who's like, I don't cry. Like, I wish I cried more. Because it is like a release. Like, it feels good.
Oh, I definitely am. We're going to edit all this out. Yeah, no.
I would love to cry more.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
There is a cathartic release from it. It's so funny. I just even literally thought about that 2 days ago. Because I'm definitely... I don't know if it's being raised by a single mom and just being more sensitive or just being teased as a fat kid. Whatever it is, like, that. I just feel... I don't cry easy, but I definitely, there's moments like Forrest Gump, when he finds out the fucking kid is his, Haley Joel Osment, gets me every time. And I know it's coming. If I'm running out the door and it's on TBS, I'm like, don't watch it. You got to go be funny right now. But I'll stop and I'll watch Hanks go, what's his name? And she's like, it's Forrest. And he's like, that's my name. And she's like,
is it smart or is it? That's
where he won the Oscar. Yeah. Is he smart or is he stupid? She's like, he's the smartest fucking kid that's ever lived. And he's like, oh God, so he doesn't run funny or people want to sit by him. I mean, I'm paraphrasing now, but yeah, that was a fucking.
I mean, I hated that movie, but that.
No.
I was a Pulp Fiction guy. Those movies were competing directly against
they
each
were.
Other. And I was obsessed with Pulp Fiction. And it drove me crazy that Forrest Gump was like getting all the
getting
love.
All the
and
love,
I'm like, this is cheesy. I don't know if it's rewatchable. I think it may have been a product of its time.
Oof. Weren't you on, you just triggered me. You've done Bill Simmons' podcast, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That to me is very cool. You've done a lot of cool shit.
Thank you.
Your Thoughts and Prayers special is, to me, one of the best specials out there.
Thank you.
So congrats.
Thank you.
For making some great work. But Simmons is one of my favorite pods. That's right. You've been on a couple times or just once? A
couple times.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's not on here, but I definitely wanted to make sure I told you how cool I fucking think that is. I love that pod. It's extra special when he has on comedians and actors. And hearing him geek out about it is very cool.
Mm-hmm. You've never been on, like...
I've been in Rich Eisen a handful of times. Yeah. And
Eisen. I really like being a podcast guest on someone that you admire, like a Bill Simmons or like Bret Easton Ellis has a podcast. Mm. And like he's one of my favorite writers when I was a kid. And like being on his podcast where he's got to research and be really nice to you.
Yes.
And ask you questions about yourself. I was like, this is the best.
Yeah.
Like if anyone has a podcast that I admire, this is not an example of that. But if anyone I admire has a podcast, I'm like, yes, I'll be a guest.
Yeah.
Because I want you to be nice to me and ask me questions.
Yeah. Pat McAfee, when I'm playing Vince McMahon on The Rock show about his life, right? And they talked about when I first introduced Vince in the first season, and they put me up and Pat was like, oh, it looks so fun, whatever, we'll see what happens. And then some of his little guys on the show were, and I love the show, were like dogging on me. So then I made a video and tweeted at Pat and they pulled up and played on the show. Cause I basically just roasted the guys that were like, fuck this guy. Just not even giving me a shot. Pat was like, give him a chance. We haven't even seen him. He fucking looks like the guy, whatever. We'll see. You got to give him a shot. And then I just kind of roasted him. And then Pat was like, we got to get you in studio when you're in town. So now I'm just like desperately trying to like get out there and time it out. Cause I, you know, and they said Zoom would maybe be an option, but I'm like, fuck that, dude. Yeah. It's,
trying to be funny on Zoom is real tough. The timing's off.
Yeah.
The timing's off.
Did you try to do any of that stuff during COVID? Did you relish the break? Like we were talking about earlier,
I was like, I wouldn't have taken a break if I hadn't been made to take a break. You know, so it was like the first time in forever. Totally. I would tape a special and then just start immediately writing the next one that I was like, I couldn't write. I wasn't able to be creative. I got my podcast up and running again and would do that over Zoom. And then we did our 100th episode over Zoom and sold tickets to that, which was fun. But I couldn't do Zoom comedy shows. I didn't even do outdoor shows till I got vaccinated.
Really?
I didn't do any of those, no.
How come?
It just seemed reckless. Rush. It was like, I'm sitting at home all day, like taking care of my dog because of this thing, but now I'm going to go out and catch it at a fucking show in the round. It just seemed stupid to me. Or like, even if I'm being safe, what if someone comes to see me and they get COVID on the way? Like, I didn't want to be responsible for that. It just seemed, we're safe enough here. Let's just hold it down.
What made you get a dog? And what kind of dog do you have?
I got a dog. I lost it real early in COVID. Like the first month was brutal where I had people like get in touch and be like, you lost it together.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I was just.
What got to you?
Like time meant nothing. It was like, what am I going to do? It doesn't matter what day it is. I just wanted to be like 6 months from now. And I would like go walk to Walgreens and get a bottle of vodka and just like drink all day. That if a friend was like, hey, can you do my podcast over the phone? I'd be like, thank God. And I would like pour it back in the bottle and be sober all day. Like I just needed something to live for.
Was it the overall feeling of just like uncertainty that was like?
Uncertainty and like it's a year of this. You know, if it had been like in a month, we'll have it. I'd be like, okay, that's the date.
Yeah.
Great. But knowing like there's no time limit on this.
No expiration date.
It was like, why not just get drunk? I couldn't think of a reason not to get fucked up. And my friends were like, hey, you're tweeting. Like this is, delete all these tweets.
Oh, really?
And sober up, yeah.
We tweeting some nasty shit, like some Roseanne Ambien shit?
Just dumb, like embarrassing stuff.
Jews is for Thanksgiving. You're like, what does that even mean? Yeah.
Nothing like edgy or weird, but like friends would be like, hey, you told me to fuck myself on Twitter. And like, would you delete that? And I'm like, oh, I was joking. I'm like, I know you were, but people don't know that. And I was like, oh, this is embarrassing. I don't remember sending these tweets.
Bummer.
Deleted them. Got a dog. Whitney Cummings helped me get a dog.
Cool.
And I went through some rescue organization and they sent me pictures. And I didn't realize Whitney was like, guys have to have big dogs. Because I would have happily had some little tiny dog to cuddle on the couch.
That's what I got. What the fuck?
But she gave me a bunch of these like big dogs. And then there was one that stood out. And I'm like, oh, that one's beautiful. And they're like, oh yeah, he's yours. If you want him, he's yours. And I'm like, great. When do I pick him up? And they're like, he'll be here in a month. And I'm like, what do you mean? And like, he's in Korea. He was a rescue from a Korean meat factory. And they shipped him over here and I picked him up at the airport the day the Black Lives Matter protest started. So instead of like meeting the dog and being like, okay, and like they were just like, take him, get him home before curfew starts and try to potty train him while you can't go outside.
And find out which side of the fence he stands on this issue. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
Bond immediately? I mean.
I bonded with him immediately.
Like Rosenthal Bond?
But he was just kind of like.
Turn up the heat in the house?
Yeah. Yeah. But he didn't really care about me for quite some time.
Well, yeah, he was just adjusting to his surroundings.
They're aloof. This breed is just kind of like, okay, like you can pet me if you want, but I'm not that into it. Mm. I'm not going to cuddle with you. He's a weird one.
Were you ever been another type of animal or pet guy, like goldfish? Did you have like, my sister had gerbils as a kid, but the fucking mom ate like 30 of the kids, and that was a wrap on that species in our house. I think it was also like just single mom being like, here's a fucking something to replace you. that, you know, I don't know. But there's any sort of like, I don't know, ferret or, you know, kids had iguanas, chinchillas.
We had some cats. We had a dog, but no, nothing too weird. I think there was a goldfish around. You know, you go to the carnival and like someone comes up with a goldfish. My sisters had one that just never died. We would like try to kill it. They would put like nail polish in the bowl and be like, this will be it. And it would still live. It lived for like 10 years.
Shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. What was this fish's name?
I don't remember. I don't think we even gave it a name. It was just like, here you go.
Pour nail polish in the bowl. We got to kill it. This thing's going to kill us.
Yeah, like, what's going to do? It was like Rasputin. The Rasputin fish.
There is a moment with the goldfish where you're like, you're overstaying your welcome, dude. You're making it weird. We all thought you were going to die in 10 days, which is goldfish standard. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
There's a reason you have the bowl and not in a full aquarium. Get out of here. So,
you're not good enough for a full aquarium. Holy shit, that's fucking funny. You got a few more minutes?
Sure.
Like 10 more? Okay, thank you. It's been great. Thoughts and prayers. I want to go back to that real quick. One of my good buds, Bob Stelton, he's a big host on the best sports show in Seattle. And you're one of his favorite comics. And I was telling him that you were coming on. And he was like, I was literally fucking watching it again yesterday. Is that your, do you take note or umbrage with your work? And are you like dialed in on what people like and how much people like it? And what is your... I don't want to say crowning achievement, but like, what do you feel up to this point? You really go, I hang my hat on that. And I would, if Spielberg was like, send me your best shit tomorrow, email it. What would you send?
I'd send my new special, Thoughts and Fire in the Maternity Ward. I think that's like, Thoughts and Prayers, I was like, maybe this is bad. The audience wasn't that into me.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, this is weird. I didn't love the venue. I didn't love the background. I was like, huh. And it's my most popular special by far. It's like, just put it out there, see what's up. But my new one, I'm like, I was like telling people like, this is my best yet. And everyone's like, we like Thoughts and Prayers better. And I'm like, all right, man.
I think it's because you were like telling people, you know, it's like people want to discover shit for themselves.
Yeah, I think when people see the one, like the first thing, the sequel's never going to be.
Yeah.
And most people don't even know about my Comedy Central stuff. They just know about the Netflix things that I've just kind of throw it out there. And like, if I'm happy with it, cool. There's nothing I'm really embarrassed about. But like the Trump roast and Fire in the Maternity Ward are my two like favorites.
Trump roast was your first roast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Nerve-wracking, exciting, ready for it.
So ready. Just like I was built for roasts and I knew it enough in advance. And I was using like jokes that I'd had for years. You know, a joke from my first ever stand-up set made it in the Trump roast.
Wow.
And then like the Sheen one was like 4 months later. So I'm like, okay, I killed that one. Now I've got to like do it again with no prep time and didn't want to like let down. That was just stressful. And then Roseanne was just whatever. And then I was like, I'm done with these.
You definitely felt like the most obvious, like when it was announced you were on the dais, it was like, oh, fuck you. Because there are, you know, people they bring on where you're like, really?
Yeah.
But you felt like the unanimous home run that I don't think, and I feel that way about Nikki too, Glaser.
Nikki, Natasha, you were like, okay, perfect.
Totally. Yeah. So no nerves going to that, just you're like, I have all these fucking great bats to hit home runs. I just get to pick which bat.
I prepared so much. I ran the set so much. I had it down. And I even like, I would sit and meditate thinking about walking from my seat to unseat in the dais up to the podium.
Cool.
I was like, that's where you're going to get nervous. So I had it all mapped out. And then right before I went on stage, and I'm just like waiting. And like, I remember thinking like, okay, I hope I'm meaner than Lisa Lampanelli. I hope I'm meaner than Whitney Cummings. And then when they would do their set, I was like, oh my God, I'm so much meaner than I thought it was going to be like, oh, they did that. It was like, oh, this is going to be great. And then the situation went right before me and bombed so hard. They had to like stop the show for 10 minutes.
That was the Trump one.
Yeah.
The situation. I fucking forgot about it. That might be one of the craziest people that's ever been involved in a roast.
Well, what happened to him was this was the dawn of Twitter. So before if someone bombed at the roast, they cut them out. You didn't show them. You maybe showed a second when you went to commercial of them telling a story or whatever, but you didn't show. You didn't embarrass them. The situation, he's halfway through a set. Everyone's tweeting, the situation is bombing. People are booing. They had to market the roast as watch the situation bomb. And they made him look better on screen than he did in the room where people, it was like a riot.
It was bad.
It was so bad. It was so bad that I was like, haha, oh shit, I'm next. Jeff Ross is on stage being like, guys, calm, like, let him finish.
So a riot as in everyone's booing, like at the, like you're ruining
booing,
comedy.
Screaming at
him. You're not even trying, or was he just like so cocky?
Didn't prepare. And they told him, here's how you say the jokes. And he was just like, I got it. Oof. He's wearing sunglasses. And they gave him grace. The first couple, they're like, okay. And then he just like wasn't taking it seriously enough that they flipped out.
Yikes.
It was bad.
Didn't you make a comment about him when you got up
like,
there?
I was like, Mike Sorrentino, great job, by the way. Everyone loved that. I was like, that was an ad lib. I've been slaving over these jokes, but you love that?
Bro, that's so funny. Sometimes just, you know, the honesty of the moment is like what crushes the hardest.
Mm-hmm.
Trump, did you get to talk to him at all? And if you've talked about this, you know, at...
No one's ever asked.
We'll be right back. I
shook his hand. I didn't meet him before.
Okay.
I'd go roast him. And he was happy. They said he was happy with me because he was worried the show was going to be bad after the situation. He was like, is the crowd going to come back? Because he's got to go like a few after me.
This jizzle tits guy shaved it. He made a great TV, right?
And he was just pumped. Like, he just went, thank you. And I heard he didn't shake hands, but he shook mine and was like, thank you. And I sat down. I was like, maybe he is cool.
What was his handshake like? Weird.
Not too hard. Not memorable. Like he's trying to like.
Did he fucking pull you in?
Mm-mm. This is he was talking about running for president, but it was still a joke then.
Yeah.
But like the next day, I was like, maybe he is cool because Jeff Ross liked him. He'd met him before. And then the next day, he was like, I want to see the birth certificate. And I was like, oh.
Home Alone Trump, people liked.
Mm-hmm.
When he was like, where are you, lost little boy? He's like, Joe Pesci's after me. He's like, you're not supposed to say the name of the guy.
Oh, yeah.
The
it was actor. Like, Trump's on SNL. I can't wait to watch. This will be great.
Yeah. I remember seeing a Jay Leno clip of it was Leno, Dave Matthews, and Trump, and Scarlett Johansson. And Leno's like, Trump, you come on in. You got the you flew the big plane, aren't they? And Dave Matthews is like, yeah, I wish I had a big plane like that sometime. And Trump's like, yeah, sometime you can all come on, Scarlett. You, of course, for sure. The other two, maybe not. And I was like, even that was just kind of pervy. And Leno was like, yeah, let me come on, I love it. You know, he didn't say it, but he was, you know, they were all perving out.
Oh, he was funny on the roast. Like when he did his like ad lib, his like rebuttal at the end, he was like going off script and like funny. Like I was like, oh wow, this is like.
And people were celebrating him because there's no pressure, right? Mm-hmm. They're not looking at you because he was such a caricature of a person almost, mm-hmm. where it was like, oh man, which is why it's so crazy that he just fuck you stay in that lane. Who knows, honestly. We'd probably still be like, dude, you watch the fucking Trump whatever because it was such silly entertainment. But like, if only he could like, you know, acknowledge the joke of it, which he can't because he doesn't want to be the joke of it. But if he could be that brilliant mm-hmm. and go and almost do what the Kardashians do and go fucking lean into it. Who cares if people hate on you?
But he's legit. When he was like rising to power, and I'm so happy we're talking politics. And he was rising to power, like, he was taking out Republican nominees, potential nominees left and right.
I know.
Just by roasting them.
I know.
He like destroyed Marco Rubio.
Never
like,
been
destroyed
done.
Destroyed him.
Just with a joke.
It was like, oh my God. He's just trashing everyone.
His timing
and
was
working.
Unbelievable. That's what was so fucking crazy. You're like, like the just, oh man. Like you're standing in a row of what, fucking 8, 12, 15, and just not even like looking or screaming, just out of the side of your mouth, knowing the camera's going to cut to you too, and waiting for the joke, and then like doing a like, I was like, fuck dude, did he script all of this? Who are you voting for? No. So can you go too far with roasts?
Yes.
I've heard people say they've gotten offended. Saget famously, you know, in I think it was the Geraldo, who was my favorite comic, still is. I don't know how you feel about
Greg. I loved Geraldo.
You did, yeah?
Loved him.
I thought he was just so not underappreciated. I feel like people in comedy, but, well, yeah, I do feel that way because I think he just was truly known for the roast. Mm-hmm. But he crushed on those, so that's not a bad thing to be known for. But I don't know. I don't know how many people saw that and saw full hours of stand-up. I got to host for him once, and Jesse Joyce, who I'm sure you got to know, opening for him at the Irvine Improv, and it was like the greatest weekend of my life because they treated me like real people, were really cool, wanted to like figure out other dates to all do as a group, whatever, but I got to watch like how good he was for an hour
mm-hmm.
as a comic and not... You know, with holding a mic and leaning on a mic stand and not in the roast setting, which is not a bad setting, just different than a comedy club, right? But I would even hear from you'd see in Saget in the Geraldo special when he passed how uncomfortable Bob was, and they were telling him, "Hey, I'm sure you've seen this," where they're like, "Look like you're having fun, Bob," and he was like, "There's some pretty offensive shit being fucking said to me. Like, it's not that easy," and I'm like I'm a pretty sensitive guy. I'm trying my best.
Oh, the look they get when I think they're like, look like you're enjoying yourself. Yes. And he's like, look like I'm enjoying myself.
Yeah.
I'm sweating bullets. Like, totally. This guy's killing me.
Yeah. Because no one gets to see or hear what's going to be said, right? You're going in fully.
They want you to have the reaction to it. And there are tricks and ways around it. I'm pretty sure like Roseanne read the jokes, you know, beforehand. Okay. But for the most part, they have no idea.
Have you been on the receiving end of or fired off a joke where you're like, oof, and you clocked a reaction? Or just something hit you a little different unexpectedly and you were like, oof.
No, because I was one of, like, I was the unknown guy. No, the joke would be like, who the fuck is this guy? You know what I mean? And I was like, okay. Like,
how many times can you say that?
No, like, I'm 30 years old. I'm not upset about this. Like, yeah. It's fine. And yeah. I'm not interesting to roast. You know, there were better targets, but I definitely had, especially the Roseanne roast. Oh, I remember Marley Matlin on the Trump roast. I was trying to set up. I was like really nice to Lisa Lampanelli because everyone was so mean to her that I was like, I'm going to be nice to her and that'll be my joke.
Yeah.
But right before her was Marley Matlin. And I told this joke that they kept telling me, please don't do this joke. Please don't say it. And I'm like, I've got it. And like, we're going to cut it. I'm like, I'm going to do it anyway just for the room. And she was pissed. I said, I forget what the joke, it was like you become this amazing actress, professional actor, famous actress, even though you have this disability, you're ugly. And like everyone was just like mad for a second. And then, I was like, Lisa Lampanelli, you're cool. And it was like, everyone was like, oh my God. Like yeah. I had to set it up that way. Yeah. But people at the roast, they would beforehand, they'd be like, Anthony, nice to meet you. And then afterwards would not talk to me.
Holy
never.
Shit.
Never.
Just cause they can't. Yeah. I was that way. In the fraternity, I pledged, did AAPI at USC here, and there were guys. You said you did the frat with Greg, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you find this also to be true where it was like, you know, it's part of the initiation, part of getting into the house where the older guys give you some bullshit, some worse than others. There were definitely guys where you're like, things were not great for you prior to this, and you're taking it out of me, but you're going a little too hard in the paint and fucking... You know, I got no defense here. And you're fucking just dunking on a 5-year-old and fucking rubbing your nuts on his face. And then afterwards, you're like, what's up, man? Welcome to the house. And I'm like,
family now.
I can't separate that, like, unless, because there's also like, even in that, everything in moderation. Like, when I was on the other side, I was such a fucking goofball. I'd dress up as old brothers and do dumb shit and pretend to be like a British brother from Chico State and say funny shit, make people like, you know, what's the fucking Fruity Pebbles theme song, you know, and if they couldn't get it, then I'd freak out, you know, dumb shit like that. And then I became friends with them afterwards because they're like, oh, you want a piece of shit to me. There's a way to whatever. But I guess what I'm saying is, you know, it's tough when, could you separate that in the frat world?
I didn't. Yeah. I mean, I got in and I loved my pledge brothers because they're like, we're hazing you to bring you guys closer. It's like, okay, well, that worked. But now I hate you. You can't be like, it's hell night and be this so mean to us. And then afterwards be like,
what are you doing for spring break next year? Hawaii, my dad's
welcome
house.
To the club.
Welcome like, to the club.
No, I hate you now.
I hate the club. I don't want to be in the club now.
Yeah, I barely came around after I got in.
Fuck. You still got homies from that world, though?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It's crazy that, I mean, I'm never surprised when I do hear like some kid died from drinking a gallon of 2% milk mm-hmm. in fucking Nebraska. You're like, duh, man. Some places, like guys are fucking crazy. There was one, I would just get stoned and sit in the back and you know, they'd have like the brotherhood meetings where they would break down all the new pledges, right? So, all right, we're going on the list. Eric Edelstein, what do we think? Everyone was in. I went to college with Eric, guy's real chill, loves tits, which we all loved it, dude. So that's 2 for 2 in my book. And the guy was real chill. Another guy, Jason. Yeah, I talked to him for like 10 minutes. Dude was not chill. He like kept trying to hit on a girl that I was talking to. So that's going to be a no for me. And then I raised my hand in the back. Yeah, I also talked to him. Seemed real cool. We actually had a lot in common about the single mom thing and loved hits, which again, thanks for bringing that up. That was a big one. But when he turned around to walk to the bathroom, he had this big black dick hanging off the back of his shoulder. And I did this 4 times, and they eventually kicked me out. I was in acting school. I was using it as an acting exercise. And I was very baked. And I had 2 people that were laughing. And when I stood up and they kicked me out, I go, who's coming with me? Fucking 3 guys came, and we got high. But yeah, I could never separate that. And some guys just needed that. This guy tried to make a kid pee his pants, and the kid goes, fuck you, and walked out. That was, still to this day, I've never seen anything that crazy as seeing a grown man after the kid he told, pee your fucking pants. And like, I remember sitting behind giggling, being like, dude, that's an insane thing to ask him to do. And be like, hey, Ray, shut the fuck up. And I was like, all right, man, he seems like a good, like, I don't know, you're trying to make him leave right now. This is so bonkers.
Oh, I'll never forget, we're getting hazed. It's like one of those overnight hazing things.
Yeah.
And it wasn't as bad as some other places at my school, but it wasn't fun. And we're blindfolded in our like boxer shorts kneeling up against the wall.
That'll never not be a thing, by the way.
Yeah. And it's like pitch black. We're out there all night, and some guy walks up and is like, don't you guys move. Don't you guys move. I've been drinking too much beer. And then you feel like warm, like warm liquid hit your back. And he's like going, oh. And I jump up, take off the blindfold. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I see he's holding, he looks shocked. And he's holding like a squirt bottle with warm water. He goes, dude, I would never pee on you. And I'm like, how am I supposed to know that? I'm blindfolded. And you're telling me you're peeing on me. I'm not going to be like, no, that's water. Like, I was like, what the fuck? And then I was like, then you got to put the blindfold back on and kneel back down and pretend like everything's cool. Like, it wasn't so much like I'm mad at what you did to me. It's like, I'm mad that you're like this. Like, I've seen this side of you that's like, I don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah. At that point, you go, I'd much rather you have peed on me and let me just see fully who you are.
Like, there were guys who'd be like, come over tonight. Right. Come to my house. And clean my apartment.
Yeah.
And you'd come and they'd like make you smoke a joint.
Yeah.
You drink beers. They talk to you. And
you hang.
You. And it's like, you hang. And you're doing shit for
that's
them.
That's constructive.
You hang.
Yes.
Don't make me get on bows and toes and see how long I can hold it. Do you guys do bows and toes?
I mean,
it's like a plank, but you're on your elbows.
Yeah. A version of that. Yeah. Wall sits were gnarly. I mean, we did this one thing where we had to eat. We went to this place called La Barca next to USC. It's like a really great Mexican spot. And you get this thing called, like, I think baby's arm or baby's foot. It was a fucking burrito. It was like 9 burritos in one. Eat that. And then there was a kid named Jeremy Shapiro. Shout out. The other kid, by the way, who made the kid pee. I won't say his last name. Jared. You know who you are. And so we had to eat this burrito. And then a kid who was in the service led military training around the house and around the campus. Bro, I've never been so glad that I was in a musical and missed that night. I was in How to Succeed in Business without really trying. I was like, how to fucking skip out on puking on frat row. Man, it was, I saw, everyone was so sick. And I'm like, I can't believe that they're doing, I mean, one kid I was like, oh, you're going to the hospital. The cramps he was having. Because everyone was like, you had to finish the burrito. And then you're just crazy.
Of course. I had, like, I didn't have a musical, but thank God. But I had a student job. My job was Monday through Thursday.
You're funny.
I would call high school students and talk to them about Tulane.
Yeah.
And so I got to leave. I'd go to dinner. They'd be yelling at us. So right when it started to get like, this sucks, I got to leave. And I was like, I'm breezing through this, not realizing the resentment that was brewing in the fraternity.
Yeah.
That Hell Week was,
was
not fun.
Well, that's cool, man. Do you ever talk about that stuff on stage? There's so many frat stories I have that I'm like, some are funny. They're more, I guess, podcast stories like this than really... Yeah. I don't know. I feel like people already look at me as in a certain way where I'm like, do I really want to fucking add into that? I was a frat guy. Yeah, fucking, of course you were. Yeah. But I'm like, I was a funny frat guy. Sure you were.
Yeah, of course.
I actually brought it up on Marin when I did his podcast and he was just like, oh yeah. And just, you know, that was the wrong thing to bring up.
Totally.
All right, we're going to close this out with a little Inside the Actor Studio 10 questionnaire. R.I.P. James Lipton. You no doubt would have been on the show at some point. So we're going to get to know Anthony Jeselnik with 10 quick questions that Lipton would throw at all the greats. Here we go. I'll be Lipton. I'm here with Anthony Jeselnik. Anthony, what is your favorite word?
Fuck.
What is your least favorite word?
I'm on the spot now.
You can email us as well.
I hate the word mean-spirited.
Mm. What turns you on? Sexually or not?
Pleasure.
What turns you off?
Pain.
What is your favorite curse word? I know you said fuck for your favorite word. Is there another?
Motherfucker.
And are you a hard F or a hard... Where do you hit it?
I hit the K.
You fucking don't skip a beat. What sound or noise do you love?
The sound of rain.
In what city?
In what city?
Yeah.
All of them.
That's an Adam Ray follow-up. Yeah? Rain on a window? Rain on a car?
Car window?
Yeah.
House window? Whatever. Like that pouring. Like I guess in New Orleans, if I had to pick one, because that rain would fucking come down. But
yeah.
It was just amazing.
That's why I asked. Like torrential downpour?
Yeah,
or
torrential
like,
downpour.
Yeah.
The more the better.
What sound or noise do you hate?
Kids playing. Fucking hate it. Get out of my face.
What game could they play that could truly drive you off a bridge?
Just that screaming.
Yeah.
Just that like we're running around, we're screaming, I get it, but shut the fuck up.
Bro, yeah, just was at Disneyland and every kid's acting like they're getting fisted by Captain Hook. And you're like, you dropped your churro, Toby. Life goes on. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Carpenter.
Nice. What profession would you not like to do?
Lawyer.
Because Pops did it.
Not just because of that, but I got to see that those yellow legal pads just like, oh, get out of here.
Is it also anything of like the just, I don't know, the 9 to 5, like the punch in, punch out,
All of it. It's just being in court, like yes, no, doing the papers, just trying to find little
same outfit loopholes. Every day.
It's just no thanks.
Yeah. Last question, Anthony Jeselnik. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I thought you were funny.
Maybe the best answer so far.
That'd be a dope one.
Super fun, man. Hope you had a good time.
Yeah, definitely.
Really appreciate you making time. You're on Twitter and the Gram at Anthony Jeselnik.
Twitter, Gram, TikTok. I got a team doing all that shit.
Yeah, you're posting a ton of your clips, which is smart. Like you said, all the Comedy Central ones that people aren't accustomed to, you got to make sure they're privy to them. Yeah. And the tour will start when?
Next month, October.
Amazing.
AnthonyJeselnik.com.
Go see him. He's a beast. One of the best. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man.
Hi, I'm Dr. Lori Watson and the co-host of 4Play.
I'm your co-host, George Fowler, former firefighter, your couple's therapist who loves to talk about sex.
Woo, let's discuss everything about the best sexual techniques to building your emotional intimacy, which is really necessary for great sex.
We bring sound, concrete tools to reframe your relationship problems and learn how to fall in love again and feel desire.
Listen to 4Play Radio on the iHeart app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.